Welcome to Sci-Fi in Color, the podcast about science fiction, TV, and film featuring actors, directors, and writers of color. I'm Maggie.
And I'm Melissa. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr as SF in Color.
And today we're talking about Sense8 Episode 8, which is We Will Be Judged by the Courage of Our Hearts. Sorry, I had to scroll. So that's why I said that very haltingly. and I believe Leto, this is a line in one of Leto's movies.
Yeah, Leto gets, and like Leto's plot usually seems to be getting the title.
Yeah, I'm sensing a theme here.
I don't mind, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, speaking of Leto, I gotta throw this in here before I forget. So this is really weird because we're recording in October, and I think the last time we talked about Sense8 in real life was probably June. So
yeah, it's a little weird. I mean, it took me a few minutes to get back into what was going on. And it was so exciting, like, the end of the last episode.
It was so exciting. Actually, I felt that same way about this episode, so spoiler alert, if you haven't seen this episode, please don't listen to the podcast. But I felt that way about the ending of this episode, because it just ends very abruptly on a very climactic moment, and I'm just like, oh man, I should watch the next episode. Wait, I have to record the podcast, in 10 minutes.
But in a lot of ways, I thought this episode was kind of like a part two to the previous episode. It was a lot of continuation and, in some cases, conclusion of stuff that was introduced in the last episode. But it was just kind of weird, because, we watched it in June.
Yeah, 2 months ago. And so it's been a long time since we've talked about this, like, in real life. So, like, I'm a little hazy on, like, continuity details and stuff. Also, as you may have heard in our little special episode, I just moved to a new city. So it's funny because I was talking about Sense8 with some of my coworkers, and one of them, he said he had seen Sense8 and he didn't really like it, and he didn't finish it. But he also said that his friends have commented that he looks remarkably a lot like Hernando, and it's definitely true. He's basically like a skinnier, shorter version of Hernando.
Nice.
Like, it's like the glasses, the facial hair, everything. He looks a lot like Hernando.
Hook me up.
Well, he's also gay like Hernando. Oh. So
you can still hook me up, it's fine.
You'll be the Danielle in the situation.
Yeah.
Except you won't get, like, battered by some crazy ex or something.
I don't have a crazy ex to get battered by.
I have that same... I don't know if it's a problem, but I'm in that same situation. We neither of us have crazy exes to get battered by.
I would consider that a win in my book.
It seems like a good thing to have going on in your life, or not have going on in your life. So I feel like it's going to be hard to kind of talk about people in separate situations, especially with this episode. So I think going chronologically is probably best.
I mean, I've separated all my notes out into characters anyway.
Okay. Well, I'll just follow your lead. Whatever you have, because you have more structure in your notes than I do. I have like a very small, tiny page of notes, and Melissa has very extensive notes. So
that's just who I am as a human.
But that helps the show immensely.
Okay.
So
do you want to start with Kala and Wolfgang?
Sure. Yeah. So when we last left off, I think Felix had just been shot, and like things were really like hunky dory and cute for Kala and Wolfgang, but then someone gets shot, and then
that just takes the wind out of any relationship. But not for Kala and Wolfgang.
I don't know why they're always, like, meeting in bathrooms. That seems to be a reoccurring theme as well. Like,
yeah, I know that. What is up with that, but I'm dude? Like, what's the symbolism that, like, I just think...
Bathrooms? I don't know.
It's just random. I don't feel like that. But everything in the show seems to have meaning. Like, this is, like, an old book from, like, English class. Like, everything seems to have meaning here. And I'm like, I don't know what bathroom symbolism is, but I don't really want to explore it further.
Well, we talked about shower symbolism in previous episodes, but, like, it just seems, maybe the fact that it has mirrors, you know?
See into the soul. I mean, it's also just convenient, because it seems like Kala's always around somebody, like someone in her family or something like that. And so bathroom is usually time when you're alone. But
Didn't she go to the bathroom with one of her relatives? or her aunt who was sitting next to her? I thought she accompanied her. No? Oh, okay. Maybe it was a mistake on my part. Yeah. Okay.
But
yeah.
Yeah, so
Kala. You want to start?
Yeah, I mean, it is a continuation of Nomi, so it is a little challenging to discuss in that way, but Nomi had just been discussing how she'd been having the wrong reaction to things. And so then we switch to Kala, who's clearly having the wrong reaction because she's at some kind of comedy movie with her family, and she's crying because she feels Wolfgang's pain. Mm. And so then she goes to the bathroom, and they have a, you know, a moment. And you don't get a lot from, like, either of them, especially Wolfgang. Wolfgang's really kind of in this reaction phase, you know? Felix just got shot, and so we just kind of get more of Felix. We
backstory.
We get the flashback. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, no, you had mentioned before that you wanted, by the end of the season, you wanted to see everyone as kids. We had seen Wolfgang as a kid before, but, like, it just struck me again, like, dang, this was well cast. Like, those kids looked like Felix and Wolfgang.
Yeah. I loved the aura that, like, the Felix kid projected. Like, it was so perfect. It was exactly Felix. I just...
Yeah.
I mean, like, the Wolfgang kid was really good, too. But, like, that Felix was just spot on. It was uncanny.
And he looked like him, too.
Yeah. It was great.
I don't know. I guess I tend to be, like, super critical once I start seeing, child actors.
Children.
But, like, children. But, yeah, yeah, he definitely gave off that Felix vibe, like, from the very start, like, meeting detention, like, what are you in for? I was like, oh, this kid. And they mentioned Conan, which I think that there was a Conan poster on the wall of their workshop in the last episode. Or whatever, mm-hmm. It's been there every time we've been in their workshop, there's a big Conan poster. So I think my very tired, sleep-deprived brain still kind of remember that that was a continuity thing. So,
that's good.
We ended up talking about Wolfgang, but he ties in with Kala a lot.
Yeah, it's the two of them really together. Yeah. Wolfgang only gets shown in this episode through the lens of Kala, and I think that actually really works, because otherwise we just see Wolfgang moping, and in this case, right. We actually get to have their relationship developing as he's moping. So, I mean, he has a good reason to mope. I'm not, like, denying him that, but...
Right.
But...
So, yeah, we get backstory about, like, Felix and how he'd basically do anything for Wolfgang, which is, like, super sweet.
I have a stupid question. When Felix saves Wolfgang from the gangs, and the gangs are talking about how he's costing them, like, billions in taxes or something, which, like, I don't know why kids would care about that. Like, I know they said their parents were caring, but, like, kids don't have any idea about taxes. They don't care about taxes. But let's...
I thought it was more like we're repeating what our parents have said and using it as an excuse to just bully you, because why not?
No, I get that, and I picked up on that, but I don't see what the initial problem is.
Well, they mentioned reunification. So, it's like,
did they mention reunification? Which side
was the communist? Yeah,
okay, that was the whole confused, because I was like, I don't understand, because where the F is Wolfgang from?
They're talking about reunification. So, like, first of all, I don't know history well, you do. Which side was the communist side?
It was East, honey.
East, right?
Yeah, what? It was East.
East, right? So, I think he mentioned, like, they were from East Germany and they moved to West Germany.
That makes a lot of sense.
And so they were just using, so he was a new kid and they were just using that as an excuse just to be like, you're different. Like, they're using that as an excuse to pick on him. Not saying that they actually cared about taxes or anything, but it's just like, we hear our parents talking badly about, you know, those Eastern Germans. And now we're just going to use that excuse to pick on this East German kid or whatever.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's how I read it. Also, I just feel like kids will just bully other kids for no reason. So,
Because kids are jerks.
I thought it was weird how, like, there was, like, a ton of little kids and there's just, like, this one taller big kid. I was a little bit, like, confused by that.
He's the leader.
I guess.
I mean, if you want
to. I was real surprised when Felix came out swinging with, like, a huge pipe. Like, oh my god. I think my jaw kind of dropped a little bit when I saw that. Because I was like, wow. This kid is going, like,
hard
in. But yeah.
That feels like a really pretty... Felix thing to do, though. Like,
it does. Yeah, like, I wasn't. Like, I was just shocked. I was like, wow, this, like, there's a kid with a, like, a pipe in his hand. But then I was like, is Felix, so, like...
He's crazy. I guess,
like, yeah, this was, like, totally a thing Felix would do, you know? I did not think I would get too attached to Felix, but...
I was actually like, just about to say that, like, this feels like a redemptive plot line for Felix. Because he's a really kind of annoying character that just kind of gets in the way. Because he's just the only thing tying Wolfgang to Germany, essentially. And he's, I mean, you know, he was inevitably going to mess up in a fundamental way, and I didn't really care for Felix.
He didn't even mess up that bad. I honestly thought there was going to be, like, a bigger downfall for Felix.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a pretty big downfall in terms of his body, but...
Sure, yeah, health-wise, he's not doing good, but... Sorry, yawning, because I'm really tired.
Aren't we all?
Tired of life. Tired of life. I thought, like, it was going to be some kind of thing where, like, he would royally screw things up. And he did screw up a little bit, but it wasn't, like, that bad. It was just more like we talked about in the previous episode of Sense8. Like, his fatal flaw was, like, I don't know, a pretty girl or something.
Yeah. Nothing to condemn him over, but...
Yeah, I thought it was going to be something, like, worse. Like, I don't know, he got greedy or selfish or something, but it wasn't even that bad.
No. It's too bad. Do you think Felix is dead, or he's gonna wake up, or what?
Yeah, it's funny because I thought like at the end of the previous episode, I thought like he was a goner. I thought he was dead.
Yeah.
But then once I saw him in the hospital, I was like, oh yeah, right. Like he's not. It's TV land. You're not dead until you're like dead, 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 super dead, and then even then you still might come back. So. I was like, oh, like, I thought he was dead, but I guess he could be okay. So I guess we'll wait and see. I mean, yeah, we don't get too much more from Wolfgang in this episode. I think that's all that really happens.
I mean...
No nude Wolfgang in this episode, because that would be wildly inappropriate.
It would be. We do get the scene with Wolfgang's father as well.
Oh, yeah. It's just... That was very... disturbing.
And Felix hits him with a glass bottle. I think he has, like, he's very physical, Felix.
Yeah, I didn't even, again, I guess I kept being, like, surprised. I was like, wow, I can't believe Felix the kid has it in him to do all this stuff. But, like, then I'm like, well, you know, like, he's sticking up for his friend, like, protecting him, make sure he doesn't die at the hands of his dad. I thought, like, yeah. I was thinking about, like, a conversation I had, like, a personal conversation I had with someone yesterday that was related to crying, so I don't really want to go into that, into this podcast, but, the fact that he'll stick up for Wolfgang, and I was just like, I can't believe he hit the father with a glass bottle, and the father didn't, like, kill him later on down the road, you know? Like, but maybe he was just so blacked out drunk that he forgot that anything even happened.
You never know. It's certainly possible.
You never know with these things, but...
But I think, like...
Yeah.
Besides the specifics of, you know, allowing us to kind of see Felix the way Wolfgang sees Felix, and not as something as a hindrance... It goes on this theme of, you know, kind of choosing your family, having friends that are stronger than blood, you know?
Yeah, a huge theme this episode was family and home.
Yeah.
So...
And then...
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it was just me, but I kind of picked up this kind of subtext that, although they're still talking about Wolfgang and Felix, they're also sort of talking about, like... Wolfgang and Kala, like, they also have, like, a really kind of, I guess, unexpected relationship, and it's kind of, I mean, who would understand it, but
right, yeah,
it's still there, and it's still kind of legit, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, relationships are a huge, I mean, when are relationships not a huge part of a TV show or a movie?
Bad ones, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess there's some situations where, like, I guess maybe Castaway, there's not, I mean, he's relating to a volleyball, but even that's, like, kind of a relationship he's kind of built. So, I'm just trying to think, like, relationships form the basis of any good story, I feel like.
No, I agree. Because
it's, like, humans interacting with other humans. So, yeah, it's like good old English class, every story is about the human condition.
Oh, my God, so, don't even go there.
Yeah, I just take you back.
I have trauma.
Not as much trauma as Wolfgang has.
True that. He is. I mean, okay. So, like, what do you think he's gonna do now, though? I mean, obviously, it depends on Felix. But
well, I really would like to see him meet Kala in real life.
Yeah.
None of these characters have met with each other in real life yet, and it's like,
get on it.
Like, yeah. Like, chop chop. It's episode 8.
Yeah.
You guys have 5 more episodes left. Come on. I'm glad. So just like kind of. I know we're going to go all over the place in terms of what character we're talking about, but, like, I like that Nomi finally got to talk to people.
Yes.
And be like, oh, this woman has a name, and she's from Seoul. And, oh, this is a Chicago cop from, this is a cop from Chicago. And Almanita's like, oh, that's, like, really cool. But, like, no one's doing the thing where they're like, let's try to call each other.
They need to have them on speed dial.
Right? I mean, Chicago PD, Will, has Riley's number, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, anything more about Wolfgang? I think that's pretty much it for him.
I mean, yeah, that's about it. Kala has, like, a decent amount of stuff going on, but all of Wolfgang's scenes are in relation with Kala. He doesn't just get time to sit by his bedside, Felix's bedside, and just kind of stew. But Kala, she's
at the beginning and end, right? So
yeah, so she's good.
I mean, we have the whole thing happening at the end. Well, no, we get the meeting with the the people who are like, oh, the wedding day will be better astrology wise and then we have another thing with her talking to her fiance's dad, right?
Right, exactly.
I think those are the three scenes she has, right?
Yeah, so, Wolfgang, like, they're like, fundamental in understanding the episode and understanding, I think, the direction of Kala. I mean, obviously, one is more important than the other, but, like, they're actually not a lot. Like, it's very important, but not a lot actually is going on in terms of Kala happening.
Yeah, so we have the conversation with the, I don't know, I don't think they're astrologers.
They're essentially astrologers.
They're, like, the religious peeps, and that's totally their official name, the religious peeps. I don't know, I think it was supposed to be, like, I think the way they were dressed was better than the first time we saw them. I don't know if that's supposed to be an indication. No.
Okay.
I'm going somewhere with this.
Okay.
I don't know if that's an indication of, like, because of the money they received for the wedding, they were able to clothe themselves better because of their financial situation.
That's a very deep interpretation.
Okay.
I mean, it's possible. I'm not completely dismissing you. I'm just saying
I would have to go back and rewatch.
But the show has been known to do that.
I have, like, I don't know. I tend to focus on, like, weird details. So, I don't know. That's something that might be, I don't know, showing that, hey, we got paid by this really rich dude who apparently, like, hates Lord Ganesha and stuff, so it's weird. Anything else with Kala, I think?
Well, I mean, so you can see that there's trouble as early as the meeting with the, you know, religious peeps, as they were. And there isn't really much time to build on that, because the next thing we get with her is that she's going to the temple. She sees her future father-in-law there, and, you know, they have this kind of
weird conversation to be having in a religious institution.
Yeah, I mean, the location's,
like, what the heck?
This is awkward. Like, if I was him, and, like, I'm not him, but why?
You're so insensitive.
But, I mean, that's exactly the point, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, I mean, he has to pay for it in the end. Because he's talking about that, like, praying to a god is, like, you know, I think the phrase he uses is primitive and terribly sad, something like that. And that, I mean, that's just like, that's insensitive. Yeah.
That's,
don't do it.
He's a humongous jerk. And I don't know. I just think that's fine, I guess, if you want to say that's your opinion. But, like, really, you're going to say that in a temple of worship where, wasn't it just a few episodes ago? Like, those people, the temple people were just, I can't remember what exactly they were saying. Was something like, oh, we need to, she's like, how can you marry this guy's son? What was that conversation?
Essentially, Kyle goes to the temple and there are people protesting outside and they are saying that her fiance's father is trying to ban, like, he's just like a bad guy for supporting religions. I don't remember exactly whether he was banning, he was trying to like ban certain things or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I would need to look that up. So sorry, listeners, I like totally forgot what happened in that episode because it's been like more than 3 or 4 months. But I mean, I remember there being tension in that regard.
Yeah, he is definitely not pro religion.
Right, he shows up at the temple and then starts talking trash about like Lord Ganesha and the people there. It's like. And, like, Kyle's like, yeah, why are we talking about this, like, here? Like, can we go somewhere else?
You know, like, excuse my language, but, talk get hit.
am I gonna have to bleep that out?
Maybe.
We've reached that point, haven't we? Okay, well, whatever. I'll bleep it out. Well, I'll bleep out that one word, because you kind of think you can infer, based on rhyming schemes, how that works out. But,
my bad.
Yeah, like, dude, you're freaking stupid, like, why?
And yet this is exactly what Kala needs. Kala doesn't want to marry this jerk, or, you know, maybe jerk or nice guy that just isn't right for her, whatever, however you interpret the fiance character. She doesn't want to marry him, and she has come to that realization, and I think she's kind of accepted it, even though,
like, multiple times.
Yeah, like, she knows this. She's still going out with the wedding, but she does know this. And
I did like how the dad called her out.
Yeah. The only person.
Except, you know, the fact that he died after, kind of.
That's what happens when you mess with Kala.
Apparently.
You see through her mask and all of a sudden,
it's time to get stabbed.
Yeah, basically.
I don't even know, man.
You know, so. But this really is, like, I understand that it's, like, he's telling her to do it for the wrong reasons, and that's why like, she has this really dramatic reaction. But it's still, like, take advantage, girl. Like, I know.
He's giving you an out.
I mean, obviously, the fiancé still won't know. Like, he's just, the father-in-law is saying, do it. And say, you know, you don't love him or whatever, so it's not blamed on me, essentially.
Mm.
But I feel like the fiancé is smart enough to see through this. But, like,
yeah,
all Kyle has to do is be, like, really earnest, and then no more wedding problem.
All her problems will go away. Well, not like that.
Not exactly.
But, you know.
But close enough.
Not exactly.
But things never happen the way we expect them to. And
the
two of them are surrounded by literally the worst disguised posse ever. Like, I don't think they even tried. Like,
they put a scarf on their face.
Like, we could still see all of your hair and your eyes. Those are your most identifying features, I think.
Well, it was a rush of people.
But, like, I mean, understandably, I wouldn't be super worried about the father-in-law identifying any of them. But, I mean, like, when they're surrounded initially, like, we get, like, a decent look at some of them. And, like, you would think that they're people who frequent the temple, not necessarily, but possibly, who Kala would be able to identify. But you know what? This is TV land.
Oh, I didn't even think of that angle of, like, Kala's gonna try to identify who some of the perpetrators were. Like, I thought it was just, like, it was just a mass of people came out, rushed and stabbed him, and, like, they just disappeared into the crowd. And
I mean, you're probably right, but I think
you have seen the rest of the show, though, so, like,
no, but they should have better disguised themselves. Like, I'm not saying it's gonna come cost them in this show, because I don't know if we're going to go down the rabbit hole of Indian prosecution, but
yeah,
but
that seems a little bit much.
Like, dude, I can, like, you take off, it didn't matter, like, you might as well not have worn the scarf at all. We know who you are. I see you.
Oh, I thought it was more like they were in a huge group, and, like, there was regular people behind them, and, like, so it was just kind of like, I don't think the show is going down that road.
Yeah.
That was pretty terrifying and unexpected, though. Talking about good luck, bad luck, right? Like, seriously, dude. Tempting fate. But yeah, I mean, like, I like that he called her out. I don't know how I feel about this turn of events, because now it's like, well, he's going to die. Like, you can't tell me he's gonna come back from this. He's going to die. Does this make it harder or easier for her to leave the marriage? Because I'm just like, well, isn't she gonna look really bad if she tries to not marry this guy? Because her, you know, father-in-law or potential father-in-law just died. Like, I feel like this just makes it harder. Mm-hmm. She should have gotten out, like, the first day she was thinking about it. She should have, like, gotten out of this engagement. But I was just like, girl, like, he gave you an out, and then he just promptly died. So things are not looking very good for you.
Yeah.
Because, like, how'd she get out now? Because, like, the dad's dead, so she looks like a jerk. She doesn't marry him.
Yeah.
You know? But then I guess it gives her more time. Like, she needs more time, because they're going to do a funeral. I assume they would do a funeral or something. So, I don't know. I do not envy Kala at all right now.
Yeah, and it's a pretty awkward situation. And
yeah, I don't know if awkward begins to cover it.
I mean, but think sure. about it this way. Like, what explanation would, like, anyone give for him being there, because he's obviously really anti-religion.
Oh, I didn't even think of it that way. Like, why yeah. would he? So it's gonna be obvious that he came to talk to Kala.
But, like, why there? Well, I mean, that even brings it back to the first point, which is like, dude, just this is insensitive. Death by insensitivity.
Is that gonna be the name of our episode? Death by insensitivity.
Who knows? But let me just say one more thing about Kala, and then I'm done with her.
Yeah.
In my notes, let me just say how I described it. They Julius Caesar him.
Yes. Stab him in the back now.
Stab him in the back now.
Now. Well, that's from a song. Yeah, I don't know if you know that.
Mm.
Do you know that song?
No, but I was going for the cha-cha slide.
What they want, I don't know. We're all revved up and
ready yeah, to go. Yeah.
It's like a Ramon song.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, fiance's dad is dead.
I thought you said Beyonce.
Beyonce's dad. I do really not know confused. Whether Beyonce's dad is alive or dead. But the fiance's dad is certainly dead. And if he comes back or is, like, in a hospital next episode, I will be, like, rolling my eyes and very exasperated. But, like, I'm fairly sure he's dead. Like, Felix got shot, but, like, this dude got stabbed multiple times.
Many, many times, yeah.
By, like, a whole staircase of people. So, pretty sure he's dead.
Staircase of people. A staircase of people.
A staircase of people. So, yeah, that's where we are with Kala and Max. Sorry, Wolfgang. I still
refer to him as Max. It's not an episode unless you do that.
It's not an episode unless I call Wolfgang Max.
How about Leto?
Leto. You know you constantly spell his name wrong in our show notes?
Really?
Sorry, that was unnecessary. But you do. And
yeah. Now that you mention it, yeah. It's L-I-T-O,
I always have to go back and correct it, but it's all, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's L-I-T-O, not L-E-T-O.
That makes sense. And, like, I took 5 years of Spanish, so that's embarrassingly... That makes an embarrassing amount of sense.
I took 0 years of Spanish, and still I knew there was an I in there.
Whatever. And I've been reading, anyway, like, the summaries. Leto. As I've been watching, just to remind me what's going on. Anyway.
What's going on? Sorry. And I said...
Don't do it.
Don't do it? Don't okay. do it. Okay, are we going to Lido now?
Yes. So okay. Last we left them, there was some inappropriate pictures that...
Yes. Daniela took on her
right,
phone.
And Joaquin was going to use to blackmail Lido, and this was just a bad situation. But...
You know, I really want to see... I mean, I don't know if I really want to see, but I'm very curious as to what Joaquin's reaction was when he found out what was actually going on, because I can only imagine, like, how insane and enraged and, like, embarrassed he must have been, because, like, I don't know where to begin with this dude, because he wants to be Lido.
Yeah.
But then he finds out all this stuff, and it's like, how does that even turn his...
That's a good point, actually.
How does that flip his world upside down? Because, like, I'd be really curious to see that, but also I'd be very scared for Lido, because I feel like that'd be a very dangerous situation for him to be in. So, like, I don't really want to see it happen, but, like, I want to see his reaction.
Maybe it made him, like, bi-curious or something. I don't know.
Ooh, that would be interesting.
Another orgy scene.
Another orgy scene, because we definitely need one of those in this show.
Every few episodes. Just do it for fun.
Every few episodes, you know?
Every episode.
But...
That's all. It's just one giant worldwide orgy.
Okay, well,
okay. I took it too far. So, I'm sorry.
So we open with, for Lido, we open with him and Hernando in the dark.
In the dark.
They get a phone call from Daniela. Things sound suspect because she's whispering and not giving very concrete details about what's going on.
But she says that it'll all be fixed. So that's reassuring.
I'll give you this. I don't know if I ever gave Daniela credit for being the kind of person who would actually, like, stick to her word and try to fix things. I thought she'd be more like a flake, but, like, she... As horrible as her proposed solution is, like, I admire the fact that she actually really wants to, like, she doesn't... She's, like, willing to sacrifice herself.
I completely agree. In a way. Like,
even though it's a horrible situation to put herself in, and I don't want her to be in that situation. Like, I think it's very, in a weird way, like, noble, I guess, that she's willing to do this, even though it's, like, very squicky and wrong.
Yeah, I think part of it is that, you know, this is all her fault. And this is, like, her way to, like, atone for her mistake. And as a viewer of the show, like, it made me really angry at her because... This is a problem that's essentially of her own making, and now it's affecting, you know, Lido and Hernando, two characters that I really enjoy watching. And so, like, I was really, you know, annoyed with her. But, you know, she's kind of owned up to her mistake, and she's done, like, above and beyond. And even though, like, it's not a good thing to do, like, in real life, and, like, if somebody was, like, proposing this, I'd be like,
No.
Seriously, like, you crazy? But...
Yeah, you're gonna marry an abuser because you don't want him to blackmail your friends.
Right.
Like,
but, like, in the show, like, she owned up to her mistake, and, like, it makes me forgive her character.
Yeah. And it also makes me go, like, it's like, I get where Lido's coming from, but also, like, you can't possibly let this happen. Like...
Yeah.
You can't.
No.
And even Hernando says as much, you know. He's saying what we're all thinking, like...
Dude.
Like, you can't let her just throw her life away.
Yeah, and...
Because you're too scared to... Well, I mean, we get that his career's on the line, but it's
But that's
like,
Lido, right? You know? He's just willing to sacrifice everything.
Everyone else.
So he can maintain his career. And I'm not, like... You know, I know he's in a really hard
position. Yeah, that's
position,
his prerogative, and, like,
But, like, seriously, how...
There's consequences. It's going to destroy his relationship with Hernando and Daniela, so...
I mean, how can Lido think that it's remarkably okay? How can he be happy if he knows that his happiness is built on Daniela's suffering?
Yeah. So, he's in that pickle now.
Oh, yes. That is a pickle.
And then, like, you know, I think the fact that it's in a graveyard is very telling.
Yes.
Like, your relationship is dead now, dude.
Yeah. I loved everyone's costumes in that scene.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I just want to watch
this. The lines were horrible, but, like, it was so... I mean, whoever did the cinematography for this episode did an amazing job. Mm-hmm. I loved I loved it. Like, the way the way this looked was amazing. From the opening shot of San Francisco to... There's this great shot where... I'm trying to remember where they were. Oh, yeah, this is when they were waiting for the car with Daniela to come by and meet them. But it's, like, there's, like, a great shot of this weird grid, kind of lit-up grid building type thing. Mm-hmm. And then Hernando's, I think, in front of it, and that looked really cool. There's just so much good cinematography. It was very low-key. There's nothing, like, super, super flashy aside from, like, the really nice landscapes that we got in the beginning, I guess. But, oh, the shots were just so well composed and beautiful. Like, I was thinking about Kathy's scenes. Like, there's so much color in those, especially when they're in the house. Again, you know, oh, sorry, I'm, like, skipping all over the place. But you know when people get cozy, like, he's, like, snuggled up on the couch in a nice soft blanket, and it's everything's colorful, and you're like, oh, stuff is gonna go down in, like, 2 seconds. But, like, just seeing his mom washing the dishes, and, like, there's, like, a ton of rainbow dishes, like, plastic rainbow dishes behind. It's, like, it's just so evocative, and it sets a tone, like, oh, this is, like, a nice comforting, like, home. Again, home is a huge theme in this episode. And it's, like, but you know... it's about to go down.
That's how it is, isn't it?
It's how it is. And especially with the foreshadowing of someone watching Caffius when he's talking to his friend. That was a funny scene. But yeah, let's go back to Lino.
So like the line that gives us the title is said first by the love interest in this movie, which is a man must never be judged by the length of his gun. We'll all be judged by the courage in our hearts.
That's such a horrible... Well, the first part, like, the length of his gun part, like, please kill me. And not with that gun. Like, seriously, what? I know it's a style thing. I know it's, like, melodrama, telenovela-ish. But, like, I just... You know me. I don't like cheesiness. Like, it's just... Unless done, like, in a very specific way, like, I can't with cheesiness, like,
I like a certain level of cheese. I know you like your cheesiness. Honestly.
I know.
But the only way cheesiness really works, at least for me, is that if it's properly built up to. Like, if you've been building up to, like, let's say, a kiss for 12 episodes. That kiss is going to have so much riding on it, so much like so many expectations that like you can overdo it a little bit. I don't mind because I deserve it for bearing with you.
Like
this
your
long.
Classic K-drama zoom in 3 times slow motion.
And I can't even
rotate.
Complain because I have literally been watching 12 hours of this show to get a freaking kiss, which is probably done extremely awkwardly because. If you don't know much about Korean dramas, they're not very good at the kissing.
I've never seen a telenovela, but they're probably on that same level or maybe worse. I don't know.
Yeah, but
anyway,
I think it's really interesting. The reason I even brought this up is that in this particular scene, like if I was like watching this movie, like I don't think I would mind the cheesiness because that's what it is, and it's all been building up to this one moment of grandeur. So, like, I don't mind if you overdo it, but because it's taken out of context, and it's, you know, obviously in the context of Sense8 and not of,
It's just so funny.
It's funny, it's awkward, it's weird.
Yeah.
And it's just, it falls completely differently. Like, even as someone who is susceptible to cheese, it's just...
Yeah.
I love
it's so meta.
It really is. I love those scenes. Yeah. I love the scenes where Lito is filming and we see his like you know, his life as an actor and I really like those scenes.
I mean how funny is it though when they all pulled out their guns and like cocked their guns while they were like making out? Like that was so hysterical.
It was pretty awesome.
My gosh. I feel like this episode again, maybe it's because I haven't seen it in a long time, but, like, I laughed quite a bit during this episode. Like, it was, all things considered, pretty lighthearted until, like, the whole violent ending scene.
Yeah.
I
mean, for me, yeah. I completely agree. it feels like a conclusion. It's kind of like the letdown until the end, but it's the easing off from the last episode, which ended, you know, in a really action-packed, violent
way. Yeah, Felix gets shot at the end of the episode. Now this guy gets stabbed at the end of this episode. Like,
I'm sensing next a theme. Episode,
what, is someone gonna blow up a bomb? Like, what's going on, man? I'm sensing a theme here. But yeah. Lino has some issues.
Yeah, he has some issues. Hernando shows up and he breaks up with Lino.
I have a lot of respect for Hernando.
Oh, though, God.
For doing what he
I
did.
I love Hernando so much.
He is such a great character.
I remember the first time I watched it, and I was really, really surprised that Hernando did that. Because even though I knew that he thought that everything that was going on was morally wrong, I still kind of thought that he loved Leto enough to kind of stick with him, you know, through thick and thin. And I know that I'm not saying, like, that's the great...
If you love someone,
I'm not saying that's, like, the best definition of love or whatever. I just thought that's who Hernando was. But when I, you know, rewatching, I see, you know, I mean, this was obviously the right choice for Hernando, but, like, I can see exactly how this came about and why it happened. And
yeah. He said it, too. Yeah. Like, Daniela kind of opened his eyes to, like, how he kind of was just, like, being complacent about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, you know, personally, it's, like, breakups where the couple, like, are still both in love are, like, the most painful thing ever.
And it's just so hard because, like, you see him, like, Hernando's walking away, won't turn around. You see, like, Leto half turn around. And it's like, no!
But, like,
it's so heartbreaking. It's like a very, like, kind of more subtle level. It's not like, I don't know. It's just very heartbreaking.
Not a telenovela level, but it feels that way in the feels. But, like, it's so smart of Hernando to go to the set to break up. Because...
Huh. Why do you say so?
He knows that as much as Leto loves him, he would never risk his career to pursue their relationship. So he goes to the set, breaks up, and when he turns around, Leto can't follow him. Because that would, you know, be suspect.
Right, so it's either, you have to choose.
Right, and he knows what Leto will choose every time. And so I found that really... It was smart of Hernando, and it's kind of cold, but, like, in a good way. Like a...
Very Slytherin.
Pain.
The show's getting so good.
Pain.
It's getting so good. Pain. I live for the melodrama. Even though I don't like cheese. Like, I feel like certain shades of melodrama work for me. So, does this qualify as melodrama?
I don't know.
I don't know. What even is melodrama?
Honestly?
Let me pull up my handy-dandy dictionary. Let's check it out.
Melodrama.
Because there's a lot of action and violence and lots of other stuff. And it's not melodrama. It's, like, almost the opposite, right? Because it's a little bit more low-key. But we still feel, like... So, okay. Melodrama. I think this is what we're talking about with, like, telenovelas and K-dramas and stuff. A sensational dramatic piece with exaggerated characters and exciting events intended to appeal to the emotions. But I guess it's, like, it's more low-key, right? I feel like it's kind of like the show, like, subverts a lot of things.
Yeah.
I feel like it's, like, it is heartbreaking, but no one's, like, when Hernando breaks up with Leto, it's not, like, screaming, shouting, throwing vases against the wall. Like, it's just, it's horribly sad.
Yeah. At the same time, though...
But there's drama.
In a lot of ways, I feel like the melodrama genre is kind of just reserved for things that girls like. It's like soap operas and, like, romance movies. And so, like, even when there are scenes which you could be like, oh, this is kind of melodramatic, it's never going to be categorized that way because that's something that's girly. Do you know what I mean?
It's like a gendered thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know if that makes sense, but...
Yeah, no, I see it. I see it. Like, I'm not super into, like... I guess I'm not super into melodrama, but I remember those nights where we would spend, like, you know, hours just watching melodramatic stuff.
Yeah.
It's
fun.
It's fun. Yeah.
But, yeah.
Sorry, I keep thinking of conversations I have with other people this week where I'm like, oh, we should do this thing. So, sorry. I'm, like, getting really distracted at this point. But, yeah. Any more for Lita?
No, I'm good. Do you have anyone you want to go to next? Otherwise,
it's up to you, man.
I'd go to Caffeus.
You lead the way. Let's go to Caffeus.
Caffeus.
So, Caffeus. He has such a weird name. I like it, but it's super weird. I don't know if it's, like, considered a weird name in Kenya.
I don't know. I'm not a,
you know,
well-versed
I have no idea.
Kenyan common names. I'm actually not well-versed on any country's common names except for America. I don't know why I said that so blasé. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, I just think it's such a strange name because I even tried, like, Wikipedia-ing it, and it was, like, super, like, it was just super rare and weird. Mm-hmm. And I was like, where did he get this name from? But yeah, Caffeus goes and visits his friend. Apparently, the trouble is that his wife likes it better when he's at work and not at home all the time because things go bad when he's at home all the time.
Yeah.
It just, the relationship works out better. I know that feel. That's, like, basically me and my family. Like, no lie, though. Like, I love my family, but, like, it's just so much better when I'm not living in the same house as them. Or at least I think so. Maybe I'm wrong. But, yeah, he's like, you know what? He didn't actually say after seeing the guy chop off someone's hands, but, like, we all knew he meant it. After seeing, and finally they start saying his name. Let me look it up. What's his name? Guy. That's not very specific at all, is it? What's his name? Guy. No. His name. I found his name on the Internet Movie Database, and now it's gone.
Well, I marked it down as main drug guy. So.
No, he has a name. I know he has a name.
They used it many times. I just could not remember, and I had no idea how to spell it.
Oh, I found it. His name. The character's name. Is Silas Kabaka, and they call him Mr. Kabaka in this episode.
Mr. Kabaka.
So, because I don't want to keep referring to him as a drug dealer guy or the drug lord guy, I want to call him by his name. So, Mr. Kabaka. We saw Mr. Kabaka in the last episode chop off someone's hands. And Caffeus kind of wanted to nope out of there. But we know it's not going to be that easy.
You got yourself into this mess, Caffeus. We all knew it was a mistake, but you kept going because you just loved your mother too darn much.
Mm-hmm.
That was your sin.
So, yeah, we get this whole exchange where Caffeus was like, yeah, I think I'm just going to have to quit. We're going to have to go back to doing, you know, the bus company clean work. Emphasis on the word clean.
This is going to be super easy.
Right, and we see a face in the shadows watching this whole thing go down, so that's not good. And then we get to, you know, that cozy scene that I said I really love the cinematography of it, where he's kind of on the couch sleeping, his mom's washing dishes, and he's like, wow, like, everything smells really good, and you look so much more healthier, but, like, I don't think I can keep doing this, you know. Even for you mom, I can't, like, keep doing, like, I guess he wouldn't be of much help to his mom if his hands get chopped off. He wouldn't be able to drive either. So yeah, I don't know how he was gonna swing that, because if you don't have a driver, you gotta find another one, I guess. But so he mentions this to his mom, but we know something's gonna happen, and of it course does. This other guy is like, yep. So I wasn't sure what angle he was trying to get at, because he was like, no one said they wanted revenge, but I think that was what was heavily implied by everyone this episode, that they wanted revenge.
Yeah.
What does anyone want? Revenge.
Yeah, because they said...
A dish best served cold.
He said that he had loved his sister, and then after disagreement with Mr. Kabaka, she dies, and he learns that love is nothing but a black hole. I'm like, okay. That seems really stupid for Mr. Kabaka, because the whole reason that Caffeus came to work for him and he was able to kind of bring him into the fold is because he's basically able to manipulate the love that he had for his mother to get her the drugs. And he shared the love that he has for his daughter, and everyone's like bonding and great and whatever. But like, if you kill the person that, you know, in this case it was the sister, you have nothing on you.
You have no leverage. No leverage.
Like,
and he knows, I mean, I'm sure Mr. Kabaka knows if someone killed his daughter, he would be out for their blood immediately. So, it does seem very stupid that Kabaka killed this person's sister. Unless it was a setup.
Maybe, but it...
I don't think we're going to go that far.
Yeah, it's not that important. It just feels really stupid for someone who has been making relatively smart choices so far. But, you know, he's looking for revenge, and he wants to have Mr. Kabaka's daughter, something involved with that. So that puts Cafes in an awkward position, so.
Yeah, so that was a weird situation. I wasn't sure what angle this gangster was trying to approach him from, because I was like, is he trying to warn him about Kabaka, or is he trying to be... Maybe it's both. Like, he's warning him and he's saying, well, I also am going to kill his daughter and I kind of need you to do that. So, like, I don't know. It was weird. Super, super weird.
Yeah. Because he doesn't say explicitly, but I think, you know, I picked up on that subtext. It's like... Right.
So he wants to kill or get ransom for the daughter or something. I don't know.
But just in general about Cafias's segment, like, on the show, especially at the beginning, first few parts, like the first few scenes, like, it seems that so many of the characters' scenes are really dark. Not like unnecessarily dark or bad dark, just dark. But like, Cafias, like, he's in the sunlight and it's bright, and I'm like, yes. There's light in this universe. I don't know. It just...
Yeah.
It's so refreshing to look at all of his scenes. Like, even when he's indoors. Just... I mean, you mentioned it before with the colors. It's just... It's bright and it's just... satisfying.
Yeah. It feels... It just feels more homey. It's not... Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a nicer place. Again, color, you know... Color grading will help in that. Like, even thinking about, say, like, skipping to the prison that Sunbox in, when she goes outside and you have those colorful murals on the walls, like, you know. Color will make you feel things. So,
I feel like that sums up a lot of cinema.
Color will make you feel things. Sound will make you feel things.
Everything is...
Narratives will make you feel things. Everything makes you feel things. Will make you feel things. But yeah, and then it's like, okay, now the dilemma is, what do I do? Do I deliver the daughter to them? And the mom's like, Cafias's mom is like, no, she's a child. Like, she has, like, she's a complete innocent. Like, you know. And it's like, well, what do I do now? And she, like, the mom thinks it's like, oh, empty threats or whatever. But Cafias's like, well, yeah. I don't know about that. I don't know if they're... empty threats. I mean, because we had seen with the flashbacks that Cafias's mother can hold her own, but like, this seems like an entirely different situation. Yeah. So I don't know how he's gonna get out of this one.
Yeah.
As we say at the end of every episode, how are they gonna get out of this one?
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, that's Cafias. Yeah. Any more on him?
No, he just gotten himself into a bit of a pickle.
Yes. So who next?
How about Sun, because we just mentioned the prison.
Sun, right. So Sun, I feel like nothing that happened in Sun's episode really surprised me. I kind of expected everything that happened to happen. So she is, I think, sewing?
Right.
Garments. And then we had a little bit of foreshadowing about that bully who makes Sujin do all the work. Sujin from America, like, what's going on there with her voice? Like,
I have no idea.
She has a very good, like, command of English and has an American accent, or maybe Canadian accent. I don't really know what the difference is. But Yeah, so Sujin and Son are kind of bonding. I really liked her little thing about, what was that comment she made about business after she trips that woman?
I don't remember what the exact comment, but it was...
You know what I'm talking about, though, right?
It was just like...
Yeah. It's like my mother taught me how to sew, my father taught me business, and it's like the second mouse gets the cheese or something.
Essentially.
But she threw in like a business term that I wasn't aware of, and I didn't write it down in my notes, but I don't know, it was just a great, like, I just, it was so much, it was so her, you know?
I really liked it. Very,
it's very, like, cut and dry, pragmatist, like, I'm Son, the businesswoman, and this is how it's gonna be. And I loved it.
I mean, this is slightly off topic, but this is, I put it under my Son notes, which is, like, you know, the show happens chronologically, and... You know, I'm kind of jumping around between the characters as I'm taking notes, so I have everything in my proper order and everything kind of makes sense to me. But I've noted that we were 8 minutes in so far, which includes the opening, which is like, what, a minute and a half or 2 minutes, and we have seen 6 of the 8 people.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'm like, wow, that's like...
This is different than the earlier episodes. Yeah,
it was really good balance, and I know that's partially because we know the characters, we love the character. Well,
we just jump right in.
Right, we don't need introductions or anything. We've earned this because we've spent a bajillion hours building up to this moment where we don't have to do that anymore. But
it was more like 7 hours, but sure.
A bajillion is a much more scientific term. It's more approximate. It was just a good balance. I was like, you know, we're checking in with all these people, and again, you know. You and I watched the last episode in June, so every time we checked in with a person, I was like, oh, yeah, hi.
You exist. Hey.
I can't remember when the second season is coming out, but...
Didn't it already come out?
No.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I need...
Maybe by the time we get through Sense8
1. I don't think so.
The Stranger Things have POC in it? The Stranger Things, is it even sci-fi? I have no idea.
All I know is that everyone is freaking out about it, but
I should probably watch it.
I know basically nothing about it.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen, like, clips, and I know there's kids involved, and it's, like, I know, like, weird, like, circumstantial. Is that the right word?
I don't know. I haven't seen it.
But, yeah. All right, so back to this.
Sorry.
So, Son, she trips that woman who is going to give all her sewing stuff to Sujin. And she is pretty pissed off, to say the least. Son and Sujin go outside. They have some more bonding, talk about making a mural and family.
And Son has the most relatable line of the entire episode, which is that, she misses her dog. I'm like, same. And I'm watching this with my dog.
I think we all knew that.
Actually, I don't know.
I think we all knew that, yeah. He's been very quiet today. It's been good. We'll see how the next 30 or so minutes go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Son doesn't have any family attachments, so at least not to anyone who's living.
Yeah.
I mean, her mother, she's very... attached to, but yeah, so she paints her on her mother's shoulders, I think, eating ice cream or something,
and Sujin was saying, I think, that it feels, or I can't remember whose line it was, but they're saying that it feels good to remember, like,
I think that was Sujin.
Yeah, and it just kind of made me think of Felix and Wolfgang in the hospital. Even though, like, personally, Felix's character really annoyed me. I mean, that's just...
I didn't find him annoying.
That was a personal thing, but, like, you know, looking back at when they were kids, I was like, oh, well, you know, he was nice, and...
I don't know if it's sweet.
Yeah, I don't...
It's loyal. Like, it would do pretty much anything for him, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're reminiscing, and then the bully comes out, throws paint on what Son just painted. Yeah. And then there's a fight. Which, you know, surprisingly, none of the guards do anything until, like, way too late.
They don't stop until Sun has won.
Right. I mean, I understand suspending disbelief, action is fun, all that good stuff. But, like, come on.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Sun kicks butt and's like, I don't want to hurt you. But.
Yes, she does.
This is a choice you're making. Choices. Yeah, I've been watching a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race, so that's like a new meme that's cropped up in recent episodes. Just choices.
Okay.
So the bully makes the wrong choice and continues to provoke and aggravate Sun, and a fight breaks out. I did love Sun though. Like, all her dialogue was spot on this episode. Like, being like, there's a lot of educated people who are stupid. And I mean, and then there's stupid people who want to pick a fight, aka you.
Oh, yeah.
It was great. I live for Sun's trash talk. It's so good.
I love her so much. And, like, I feel like, personally, I don't know about your opinion on this, but she gets a lot of hate for being, like, a stereotype, I think. Of all of the characters, I generally see her, people having the most problem with her.
Well, I guess an Asian knowing martial arts basically, and a cold, calculating, smart businesswoman, but like, I feel like she has enough personality and other stuff going on that I don't really see her as a stereotype. I guess I can see it, but
because, like,
I don't know,
in my eyes, yeah, we've talked about this
she's
before.
Just a strong, independent woman who don't need no man. Okay.
And the show makes an effort about subverting your expectations and subverting your stereotypes, in that, like, it would be really easy for her to become one, but she has, like, so much depth, and it's, like, I feel like the stereotype is that, like, you know, she'd be, like, cold and calculating and nothing emotional, but, like, she has
so
much
emotion.
She does
have emotional stuff going on.
Too many emotions.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, come on. Did you see the look on her face when she got those paintbrushes from her new family? I mean, come on.
I cry every time. You know? No, I don't, but I could.
Yeah, I just, like, I don't think Sun's a stereotype. I guess I can see why people would have problems with her or think it's problematic, but I really don't, I don't see it. Especially, like, the more you go, the more deep you go with the show, the more you watch, like, these people are fully fleshed out characters and people, so yeah. I don't think so. So, yeah, Sun obviously wins the fight because she would.
Of course.
And I just hope that woman knows to not ever mess with her again, because that would be a bad idea.
But she got stabbed.
Oh, yeah, she did get... I couldn't tell if she got stabbed or if it was, like, a kind of glancing kind of cut.
I mean, we don't know how serious it is, but just that it was a knife and it was against her, like, the side of her stomach.
But, yeah, I wrote down in my notes, because I think I... Because, you know, it's a prison fight. There has to... Whenever you have a prison fight, there has to be a shiv involved somehow. Yeah. So I wrote, the shiv comes out, because I was just like, like, I gasped and laughed a lot during this episode. I was like, when the shiv came out, I was like, oh, it's going down. Because, you know, generally she's doing hand-to-hand combat with people, not fighting people with knives, so I know it's going to be a little different this time around. But yeah, great fight scene. Is it bad that I'm thinking of just now? I just saw Secret Garden and Stunt Woman, Korean Stunt Woman to be specific.
I was just talking about check that. Secret Garden with somebody.
The best Korean drama.
If you ever get curious about Korean dramas and you're like, I wonder what this is all about, check out Secret Garden.
You should watch Secret Garden is the one you should watch. It's the only, I think it's the only one I ever really, really, truly liked.
There are some good ones out there.
It's full of melodrama. Yeah, no, I know it's not the only
but
good
it
one,
is.
But I just like. It's a classic.
Absolutely. It's really good.
It's a classic.
Anyway.
And the main character is a Korean stunt woman. I mean, come on, guys. If you like meta stuff, and you probably do if you listen to us, like, you should check it out. But yeah, the shiv comes out, and there's a fight, and then she's in solitary. I guess, surprised that they allowed one of her cellmates to deliver food and stuff to her. Because I was like, well, that napkin could hold anything. Maybe they show that it was, like, paint brushes. But, I mean, it was a touching moment when it was like, you know, we know what you did for Soojin. It was like, family, you know?
Yeah. It's like, she's fighting people. Like, her arc I find so compelling because she starts off, like, essentially so alone. And
mm-hmm.
she's getting people who, like, she cares about and care about her. And I just really like her. And
yeah.
Her, I think I mentioned earlier on, you know, a few episodes ago that she has my favorite plot line. And I think that's why I find that kind of almost kind of a coming into her own extremely compelling. And not that
Bildungsroman.
What?
Bildungsroman. Exactly. I'm getting real English major up in here.
Oh my god. Don't.
The human condition.
Because, like, she starts out and, like, she is, like, hella competent, you know? Like, she is so good at, like, the business stuff, and she's great at fighting.
But she's alone.
Yeah.
But she's alone. And what does... And nothing... It doesn't... Nothing means anything when you're alone.
Yeah.
Or something. Something like that. Along those lines. No man... every man is an island. But also, it's like, I've so many cliches being thrown out this episode. But it's, you know, like, it's just nice to see her get a... Does she change the most, do you think? I know you've seen the whole season.
I don't remember.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll find out soon.
I honestly couldn't say. I don't want to make any blanket judgments.
Any assumptions, yeah.
Do you want to move on? I'm done with Sun. I'm done with her.
Yeah.
So let's done.
Talk about... Nomi. So we open with her and Amanita and that gorgeous, gorgeous shot of San Francisco. And talking about how it's weird when you feel one way, but everyone else around you feels another way.
Yeah. I didn't like that.
You didn't like that?
I like the sensation that they're describing, but I just found the dialogue really awkward. Mm. Part of it, I will grant you, is that it's the beginning of the episode, and, like, I feel like it was created as a letdown of the action scene at the end of the last episode.
Oh, right. It's been such a long time.
And, maybe if it was watched more in conjunction with that, I wouldn't mind it so much, but I just kind of find it awkward, and I was like, I get what you're saying, but it just feels like you're, like, the Nomi became the mouthpiece of the writers.
Well... We've talked about that in regards to this
just
show.
Just because she is doesn't mean I have to constantly remember it.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
Yeah. So she's on that hill. And then later on, we see she's hacking into... I don't know what she's hacking into. But she's hacking to something to find out more about...
She's doing hacking things.
She's doing hacking.
And she's learning about the BPO, I think.
Right, the organization that Whispers is a part of.
Yeah, and she gets her first visit.
Oh, dear. Which is very disturbing for us, because I was like, what's going to happen to Amanita's mother?
With Will.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about how she gets her first wizard visit from Whispers.
I mean, that too, but no. Yeah, she meets Will, and she actually meets with one of the sensates for the first time.
She meets Sun, and she meets Caffeus.
Yeah, she gets great. Around this episode. But, like, I love Amanita in this episode where, like, she's in the room while she's talking while Nomi is talking to Will. And she can't hear anything. She doesn't know what's going on, but... Like, she's super into it.
It was nice to see that because none of the other sensates have really told anyone else that they can talk to anyone. So it's nice to see someone from the outside who's not going, wow, this person's crazy, a la Diego. So it was really great to see that. I do hope they meet in real life at some point. But, oh my gosh. Sorry, skipping ahead, but Nomi's bicycle scenes were awesome.
They were so
awesome.
They were just so well done, and like
so the way well that, shot. Like,
we were gliding beautiful. Along with her.
The camera work was awesome.
It was so beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta look up who did the cinematography. I know it was a different director listed for this episode, So props to that guy. I wanted to look up who he was before we started talking, but I didn't have the time. And whoever did the cinematography for this episode, so great. But yeah, she gets a visit from Whispers. She's also talking to Will while he's looking at a database that has information about BPO and information on
right,
Niles.
Right, so we learn a little bit more, not a lot more, but we are moving forward with that kind of stuff. That we learned that Metzger had been lobotomizing people all over the world thanks to the BPO, and he had probably met Whispers at University of Chicago. And then all of a sudden he's at the door and it's like, what?
Random aside, University of Chicago has an excellent writing program apparently for their undergrads.
Oh.
I just learned this a couple months like.
Oh,
couple
I actually did know that. I had a friend who applied to University of Chicago and she didn't get in, and she was like super duper bummed. She wants to be a writer. She'd written novels. She self-published a novel in high school. Anyway, that was a really long.
You're not talking about yourself, are you?
No. I'm like, besides all the other stuff, self-publishing is not for me. But she was like in 10th grade or something. This girl self-publishes her novel. I'm like, you do realize that you are like 15 years old, and you're gonna look back and despise this, right? I'm sorry, that went.
I want to hear more about this after the podcast. But yeah, like, so apparently he met Whispers at University of Chicago, which is, you know, Will's in Chicago, so yikes.
Yeah, how did they not find Will first?
Right, and then the whole thing was like. I don't know if it's Heroes-esque. I compare everything to Heroes because I just think it applies to a lot of things. But, like, you know, it's, like, program for, like, positive mutations or whatever. Because this is sci-fi land. Hello.
Yep.
Sci-fi land is calling. They want to just put themselves in the plot again. So, you know, Will's looking up this information. Even though Diego at this point, thinks he is, like, bat crap insane.
But I feel like that's how Diego, like, digs it a little bit, you know? I feel like he likes being the sane one in a relationship. Because that's probably an unusual position for him.
There's a lot of extrapolating going on here about Diego. But yeah, so, you know, he's showing all this stuff to Diego. And Diego's, of course, this show is super meta. And it's like, if this was, like, an episode of CSI, then I'd be super into it. And then, you know, later on, the chief goes, like, this isn't, like, a movie or TV. It is, bruh. But
I don't like when characters do that.
It's
too
much?
Because it just takes me out of the, you know, whatever, TV, movie, whatever. Like, when a character specifically says, well, this isn't like TV show or movie. They can reference a specific one and I don't mind. But if you're saying just in general, I'm like, yes, it is. Don't make me think that about your show. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's just a personal preference, but...
One of my favorite songs is a song called Cinematropolis by Blue Scholars. And in that song, one of the lines is like something like, it's something about cinema and reality. Hold on, let me try to dredge it up from my memory.
Dredge it.
You know, I'm just going to Google it because it's not going to come to me in time. But Blue Scholars Cinematropolis lyrics. Let me look it up. Hold on. Yeah, hold on. So this is... I just feel like it applies in this situation. If it spins on a reel, it's got to be real. But real in real life just reminds us of film. And now you're saying something's like a movie when it's real. Like a film's much realer than anything you feel. Which I feel like is right in this situation.
I think that works.
Like, it's always really funny when people describe something happening in real life as a movie... Or like a film, but it happened in real life. So it's like, what are you talking about?
Your description is inherently
wrong. It's inherently
wrong.
Real. Right? So it's like, how are you saying something that's happening on screen is more realer than real life, you know?
Yeah. That actually doesn't bother me as much, though. It bothers me more when a character says, oh, it feels like a movie or whatever.
It's like the opposite of what we just described.
Yeah. I don't know, because... When a person in reality, well, I mean, for one, it's a kind of meaningless description.
Right? Like, what do you mean it this isn't a movie or a film? That could mean anything.
Yeah. But.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway.
Anyway. All right. We've gone off onto many tangents this episode. But yeah, so Nomi, so Will tells Nomi, don't look him in the eye, because that's how he gets to you.
And, like, there's so many, like, supernatural villains that do it that way.
Don't look them in the eye.
Yeah, don't look at them, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And then,
aren't the silence like that or something? It's been a long time since I watched Doctor Who.
Yeah, it's like if you look at them directly, like, they erase your memory, very Men in Black and all that good stuff. It's been a while, dude.
Oh.
I don't know. I forgot to check when Moffat's leaving the creative team, because I should probably get back into Doctor Who once that happens.
I might do that, too. But I'm just... You know, I was looking at, like, a panel, maybe it was from Comic-Con or something, of Doctor Who. This is a slight tangent, a complete tangent, actually. But it,
this whole episode has been a complete tangent.
But it was, I guess it was, you know, the Doctor, and it was probably a companion or whatever. And I'm like, I don't recognize anybody on that stage. Like, I know, like, oh, he's the 12th Doctor or whatever, but I haven't seen a single episode with him.
Yeah, same.
And, like, I was never a huge Doctor Who fan. You were a much bigger fan than I was, but...
But then even I stopped. I just stopped watching.
Like, ugh.
You know? I was a very big fan.
It lost its mojo.
It did. So I'm hoping that it will get back its mojo when Stephen Moffat leaves the team.
I mean, how can it not?
Right? Anyway, and also I need something to... So, Steven Universe is done, and RuPaul's Drag Race is going to be over soon, so I need something new to watch. Maybe I'll just head over to Stranger Things, or maybe I'll start Twin Peaks like I said I would. One of those things. As if I have time to watch TV nowadays. I have a real job now.
I just started a K-drama. Okay, no, let me just tell you. I've been...
Okay, I feel like we're getting way off track here.
Just let me say, I'll do it in less than 30 seconds. It's a K-drama called W. It was new this year, and it's basically about this woman who is a doctor, and she gets pulled into her father's her father writes like comic books or something. Mm-hmm. I can't, something like that, and she gets pulled into the comic book world, and she keeps going back and forth between the two places or something. It's like, I'm a little like, I don't know, it's really good, but I haven't really had the time to watch it, so I saw the last episode that I watched like a while ago, so I am probably forgetting things, but mm-hmm. It has a lot of potential, and it was very popular this year, so
okay, cool.
You're like, I literally don't care.
No, I really do think it's cool, but I also want to finish this episode up because we're getting to that 130 minute mark, and I want to get to around that time.
Okay.
So yeah,
we learn a little bit more.
Back to Will and Nomi.
The only thing we really learn about like Metzger and Whispers and stuff is that the company that funded the operations is the same one that rented the truck. And honestly,
well, we already knew they were connected.
Yeah, but we didn't really learn anything exactly. The only thing that I learned was that like this, I agree with Diego in that like this CSI crap is like the weakest part of the show for me.
I also learned that, well, maybe we knew this before, but it was just further reinforced that Amanita's really good at creating distractions on the fly. That was a great moment.
That was.
That was, like, the bathroom scene was so funny. It was hilarious.
It was genius.
It was genius. I'm changing a tampon, just, like, throwing it at that secret agent's face.
So good.
And because he was not about to take that ish, but then she just fully committed herself to the act.
You gotta commit and then, yourself.
Like, you gotta commit. And then, like, once she committed, he was like, and it was like, yeah, thought so. It was such a great way to buy Nomi more time.
Yeah.
I love Amanita. She's awesome.
But, so, Nomi runs away, but then they catch her, and she gets surrounded, or not really surrounded, but there's two, I think, police officers there.
But she ends up calling upon the other sensates for their skills.
Yes, and Son who is sleeping in Seoul. I was
sleeping,
and I was just like, that was such a great delivery. It was just so like, fine.
But that's Son for you.
Hmm.
That's so Sun yeah. for you.
It was like, so she'll great. Do it, but, like, you know she won't be happy.
So, yeah, so she kicks butt.
And with Will's help, actually.
Gets on a bike.
With what? Will's help.
Yeah, Will gives a lot of advice saying, okay, he's calling for backup, he's going to use his right hand, this, and this. Sun uses that information.
It makes such a good team!
Yeah.
It was so good. I love when they're working together, and there's three of them, and I was like, on!
Yes, it was so great. And then she runs off, takes the bike, pedals away, gets into a car, runs away. Caffeus joins her, and they do a flip. I love that when the car did the flip. I was like, my jaw actually dropped, and I was like squealing. I was like, oh my god! Like, it was so cool.
It was great.
Like, I saw this in a movie once. Again, going back to the whole, I saw this in a movie once.
And good, then good.
I guess, I don't think we went back to her. We just know she's in the car driving away. Yeah. And
the last thing we see is, you know, the car driving, and, you know, she's presumably going to escape. So, that's good.
Yeah. So that's.
Like, my heart was, like, pounding so hard. That was just such a great sequence. I loved it.
It was so good. It was so, so good.
This show has, like, flashes of brilliance.
Yeah.
It's not a brilliant show. And, like, I wouldn't call it one of my favorite shows. Definitely not. But it has those moments that keep you coming back.
I really like this show. But then again, I don't know. I feel like I don't watch as much as I used to. Or maybe it's, like, I'm very selective about what I watch, so, like, I don't know.
No, I mean,
it's
I like the show, too, don't get me wrong. But, like, there are moments where it just becomes, like, amazing.
It's so right.
And if it could just do that more, it would be amongst my favorite shows. I mean, like, I like it now, and I'm definitely going to watch the next season, and, you know, like, I'm invested, but I wouldn't say it's, like, it's just it doesn't do it enough for me. It does it sometimes.
So I'm sorry. I thought I was going to do a good job of not backtracking to other people's threads or storylines, but I have to ask because I wrote this down on my very first comment. What was Kala mouthing when she was in the theater? Because she's looking at the screen, crying when everyone else was laughing, but she mouthed something. But I couldn't make out what she was saying.
I don't know. Or I don't even remember that.
Okay. Well, let's get back to... Okay, so Nomi escapes on the bike.
That's about it.
Flips a smart car. It's great.
Yeah. The only thing I will say more about Nomi is that when she's in, I guess, the living room with Amanita, and Amanita describes the sensei relationship as FaceTime without a phone. And I was like...
Dated.
People still use FaceTime.
I don't even mean it like that. I mean, like, it's gonna be dated if people watch it in the future.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But I mean, we were just talking about that in our Independence Day episode. Everything dates you, you know. But that wasn't my point. My point was that, like, the sidekicks get all of the best lines.
Yeah, obviously they have a much lighthearted view of everything.
I mean,
so yeah,
like.
Marvel dialogue.
Yeah, and it's a way for, like, us, because I feel like it'd be really easy for the show to make us not really like the side characters that much, because it's, like, really focused on, like, the main eight. But, like, they give all the good lines to their sidekicks, basically. And, like, it's really cheap to do that, but, like, I'm cheap. Like, I love it. Like, it works for me because I'm, like, trash. I know it's...
But I love it.
I know I'm being manipulated, but I don't care because I love it.
There's certain things we'll just like Caffeus is willing to be manipulated, we are, as the audience, willing to be manipulated.
That's true.
So.
Yeah. I mean, we talked a lot about of what was going on with Will because it was in conjunction with Nomi. And we do see at the end of the episode that he gets suspended for, that he's been, you know.
About time.
Yeah, really. He has been digging for a long time, and there's been no repercussions, like.
Yeah, like, in real life, like, I would hope that police are being accountable and cracking down on people doing way too much shifty-ish on databases and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, using his dad's captain's clearance and, like, that's sketchy. Obviously, we know why and we understand and we want him to, you know, keep investigating. But, like, as a outside person, like, this captain, like...
You can't let that slide. That does not look good.
It does not look good at all. And he gave him warnings and all that, all the rest. So, no. So, yeah, I'm, like, it was, like, oh, finally he's getting called out on this ish. It took forever. It took, like, 8 episodes, but okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know how, I wonder how Diego feels about all this. Because he's going to have to be seeing this from the lens of, like, oh, Will's kind of going a little crazy here. Making out with thin air. Dude, I totally expected that to happen. Like, I saw them kissing and I was like, I didn't think it was going to be Will. I was like, did her dad leave the house yet? I was like, it must be so awkward for them to look and they're just kissing air. And then when it happened, I died laughing. It was great. So, and I, like, to see Diego's look on his face, and, like, Will can't, like, explain that ish away, so it was, like, perfect. Oh my God. I cackled. I straight up cackled. It was great. But yeah, Riley and Will are... We don't get any Riley by herself in this episode. It's just... She just comes with Will.
I mean, we do get... I think we get one scene with her, but not really.
Do we?
Yeah.
Oh, right. With the family friend or whoever that was. Okay, guys. So, we're back. We had a bit of a family emergency, but we are back.
Nothing is as important as this podcast.
Well, my family will be fine. So, I'm sure everything's okay. But let's see, we were talking about Will and Riley, and we were talking about Sven.
Yeah, so that's the only scene that Riley basically gets in this episode, where she visits Sven. And, like, I'm sorry, but every time I say the name Sven, I just think of Frozen, and maybe that makes me a little, like, racist against Iceland or the Nordic people, but... You know what I mean, though? Like, when you only have one experience with something, that's how you explain everything. Mm. It's like talking about your one black friend.
It's stereotypes.
Exactly. And so I'm stereotyping
Nordic people?
Nordic people. Are Icelanders Nordic?
What? I don't know. Iceland... It probably is. It's up north. I don't know. So I'm assuming it's Nordic. I don't know, man.
It's more west, though. It doesn't matter.
Speaking of Frozen... What was really a wild thing that happened to me the other day was I was just, I have a very long commute to work, so I'm driving home, I'm on some, like, variety radio station, and for some reason, they play Let It Go.
Yeah.
But I was so confused, because I've never heard that played on the radio before.
Yeah.
And it's also 2016, so it's been, like, 2 years almost, so, like, I was confused why Idina Menzel was... on the radio, but
like, I just went with it. You sang along loudly, right?
I did sing along a little bit, but I was pretty confused.
It's one of my favorite go-to, like, road trip songs. You just turn it on, turn it up, everyone knows the words, and everyone is just singing their heart out. No one can reach the notes. It's beautiful.
It's just not a song I ever expected to hear on the radio. Yeah. Although, I mean, I think the only other Disney song I hear on the radio a lot, or I used to hear a lot, would be, like, Colors of the Wind. But that was really it. When do they ever play Disney songs on regular
radio? I don't know, but they should.
Anyway, back to this. Again, it's kind of, we kind of took a big long break while I had to deal with something. But Will and Riley, where were we?
Okay, so the thing about Riley is that nothing really happens with her. The only thing of note which really happens in her scene with Sven is that it's noted that she doesn't drive anymore, and so she's asking him to drive her around, and, you know, that's essentially it. It's just like a little check-in and be like, look, Riley's still here, and then we get to really only see her in her context with Will. But I really liked the scene that they got together where they were going back and forth between her house in Iceland and his apartment in Chicago. Like, that was really, really sweet.
I wrote in my notes, if I can find where I, like, threw my notebook. I think I remember what I wrote, though. I think I wrote something along the lines of, another OTP emerges. but that's what I said. So it was before the kissing. It was like, Like, right when we got to, right when we started flipping in between their apartments, I was like, my OTP senses are tingling. and again, it's like a thing we're trained to, you know, notice and do. Yeah. So, I'm trying to remember. It's such a weird, it's always so weird when we get, like, cut off in the middle of a podcast, because I can't remember what I was just talking about.
I don't know. That's why notes are helpful.
I didn't even take that many notes for this episode. I was just too, like, mesmerized by, like, one being back in the world of Sense8, and then I was just like, plot is happening, and I don't know what to write about. So Will, you know, did we finish talking about Will? Like, what? So Diego sees him making out with the air, which is hilarious to me. What else happens with that guy?
Okay, yeah. So basically we get Will and Riley, which I have a few things to say about their scene in the beginning. Then we get Diego walking in on them, which is hilarious.
On them, quote unquote. Oh, right. I actually had a question for you. So this is to do with Nomi. When Nomi is in the car, Cavia starts driving the car, right? I am not sure how to wrap my head around this. Nomi gets in the driver's seat, but I think when Cavius is driving, she's suddenly in the passenger seat. But then who is driving? To quote the very like the old episode, who's driving? Like, is it like she's imagining? So she's like, she's actually,
she's a Matt. That's what she's like. She's feeling, right, that she's kind of watching him do
right,
it.
Right, but she's,
but, like, she's literally driving.
She's literally driving, but like, we see a scene from that perspective, like she's in the shotgun seat, because that's her perspective, because Cavius is really driving the car. Okay.
Yeah.
It just got kind of weird for a sec, because I was thinking, oh, that's...
It is a little weird.
Interesting.
And it's also weird, like, you know, when Will and Riley have their kiss scene, like, what are they feeling?
Right? Because we talked, like, about that previous episode, it was like, what, the... Doesn't, like, Sun smoke a blunt, and it's like... Like, not there, but kind of there.
Right. She kind of feels it through Riley's memories.
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of how we take it. So, like, when they feel like they're in an environment, they're really just feeling it through someone else. But in this particular case with Will and Riley, they're not going to know what their lips
feel. Yeah, they were, like, super like. Into it. But then I was like, wait, that's confusing. This is confusing.
It doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Whatever. We'll suspend our disbelief.
I always
say it's the
to.
Power, you know, of love.
I really liked when they were going back and forth, and we go to Will's apartment, and he starts cleaning up the beer bottles. I don't know
why.
Oh,
I totally didn't
that,
notice
like,
that.
Really,
that's so funny.
I just found it really endearing. Aww. Like, oh, he's trying to make it look like cleaner and like...
The whole cleaning of the
less
bachelor
like a bachelor pad.
I literally read a fic where that happened, and I read it this morning.
Yeah. But then the trains go by.
I looked up who did the cinematography for the show. His name, if I can find it, is John Toll, and he has won, I think he won 2 Oscars for cinematography.
Who's Oscar?
What?
Never mind.
Did you say who's
stupid.
Oscar? I'm gonna slap
don't.
You. So he won. He was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Cinematography, and he won 2 Academy Awards for Best Cinematography. So
for what?
So Braveheart and Legends of the Fall. Legends of the Fall, and then the nomination was the Thin Red Line. These were all films that came out in the 90s.
I haven't seen any of them.
I mean, I'm looking at his other credits. Like, basically, I think just everyone who worked on Sense8 also worked on Jupiter Ascending. So, or Cloud Atlas, or both. So, like, again. Like,
we should... I know it doesn't really fall under our...
It's not POC. I mean,
like,
I guess maybe.
Jupiter Ascending is the best worst movie possibly that I've ever seen.
Can you
seen.
Believe that it was made by the same people who made Sense8?
It is such a freaking mess. It is so, it's almost, you know, it's glorious to watch its destruction. Well, actually, no, it's not a destruction because it never started out as anything. It's just, it's a mess. And Eddie Redmayne is in it, and he is so ridiculously committed to his stupid character. It's almost like I get secondhand embarrassment watching him be so committed to his stupid character.
I'm just reading the.
I have strong feelings.
I'm just reading
about
the Wikipedia article, and I'll link to it. But although critics praised the visuals, world building, and Michael Giacchino's musical score and originality, the general attitude towards the film was negative, with most criticism focused on incoherence in the screenplay, Eddie Redmayne's melodramatic performance, the characterization, and over-reliance on special effects, blah, blah, blah. It found more positive response among a niche of female science fiction fans who appreciated the film's campiness and the film's deviation from typical gender norms in a genre that is traditionally male-centered.
That's exactly what made it good. And the reason I actually watched it is because somebody had recommended it to me based on that, yeah, it was a female main character, one, but two, it was essentially a fan fiction. It was like a Mary Sue self-insert. No, but like, it was kind of beautiful because you don't really see that in like a big movie. It's not really something that is very common. You get that a lot with men in action films.
Like a Gary Stu type thing.
Yeah. But
Batman and James Bond.
See that. I can't think of another movie that did what Jupiter Ascending tried to do. It failed. It epically, horrifically failed. And the plot was awful.
But it's like original in that sense.
It tried, and I do give it credit for trying. It deserved better than it was.
So basically it was like really original in that sense, but just because it was original didn't mean it was good.
Oh god, it was terrible. I could literally go off. I won't, but I could.
Yeah. Isn't that so wild that the people who made that made Sense8 though?
Yeah, it's crazy because
think about the amount of planning and how you have to make it all cohesive for Sense8.
Yeah. Jupiter Ascending was incoherent. The plot made pretty much no sense, and it was really repetitive. Like, the same kind of ideas kept happening, which I can understand why they would do something like that. Because it's like, it kind of makes it easier to understand in, like, a complicated world, mm-hmm. you know, with a lot of world building. But it was just awful because the characters were doing the same things. They weren't learning from their experiences.
God, it's like a sitcom.
Yeah. They never...
Anyway.
They never...
anyway, like, let's wrap up this negativity. And let's finish with Sense8. So...
Yeah. The only thing I really have is, like, I really just liked the shot where it was Will and Riley watching the train mm-hmm. at the window.
In the hand.
Remember that? Yeah, his hands were going. Ah. And it was, like their bodies were kind of dark, but the light was coming in from the window. I just really liked
it was, like,
shots.
Backlit.
I think I've learned that.
They were backlit.
It was just beautiful,
yeah.
And it was romantic, and
Dude, my favorite kiss scene so far is Wolfgang. I almost slipped up. Wolfgang and Kala's almost kiss scene in the previous episode, I think.
That was beautiful.
It was so hot, and also really well done.
Too hot?
Hot. I have to bleep myself out again. No, but seriously, like, I thought that, I don't know, that was my favorite kiss scene so far, yeah. But I also understand and appreciate our other OTP in the corner, Riley and Will. I don't know why I'm, like, blanking on his name, but yeah.
I mean, I can see why people in the cluster would develop, like, relationships like this, you know, but I feel like mustn't it be really awkward?
Yeah, is it?
Because you can kind of, like, feel what they're feeling and, like know the things they... Like, there's no secrets. There's
but that's
no,
what I mean. Like, I don't know how much extent are people feeling what other people are feeling? Cause, or is it, like, does it develop over time? Because remember, in an earlier episode, Wolfgang is having sex with someone, but the only thing Kala feels is, like, that it's warm. She doesn't feel other sensations, so it's like... But then again, that was early on when people were still figuring out what was happening, so, like, maybe... I don't know. You know what I mean? It's weird.
I don't know.
I don't know what the rules are for Sense8.
That's part of the problem.
Right? We don't know what the rules are. It's never super clearly delineated or anything. It's weird.
And, I mean, it's good in the fact that we're learning along with the characters, but... It's also kind of annoying because you're like, I don't know what any of this is. I don't know how to process it. And
Oh, well. At least it looks cool. And it leads to cool action scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those action moments where, like, it's, like, switching between the different sensates, like, those are the best.
Yeah. I'm just scared something's gonna happen to Riley's dad because, like, who else is there left for people to, like, to get hurt or, like, killed, you know what I mean? So.
So true.
I'm, like, when she was like, oh, yeah, my dad's not here, I'm like, what's happening? What's happening right now?
And her dad is, like, so sweet.
Yeah,
and, like,
you know something bad's gonna happen. And then, like, you know, Kathy's his mom. Maybe something's gonna happen to her. It's like, there's so much stuff going on. I did have a thought. Oh, yeah. So I was looking up trivia while we took our break. And apparently, you know that volcano whose name no one can pronounce correctly?
Yes.
So the actor playing Riley did not pronounce it correctly either.
Really?
Yeah.
That is awesome.
I'm curious to see if anyone can... I'm sure there's YouTube clips of people doing a correct pronunciation or something, but...
It sounded good.
It sounded good, but then again, we don't speak, like, Icelandic or anything.
That's true. She could have said almost anything, and I would have been just like, yeah,
that sounds legit.
Sounds good.
Seems all right. But yeah. I really don't know if there's anything else to discuss, because I don't remember what we talked about when we got cut off.
I think we covered everything that we were talking about. I think, in general, I really liked this episode. I really enjoyed the episode.
Yeah.
Like, a second piece to the previous episode for me, and I just want to watch the next
episode. Me too! Right after I read more fanfic and stuff. But yeah, I was like, right after we finished, I was like, oh man, I really want to continue watching, because, like, I need to know what's going to happen to the, like, fiance's dad. Like, what?
Yeah.
I was just, like, so shocked. I know, quite a few of the Sensate episodes have ended on a very violent note, so it's, like, not anything super new, but...
Yeah. I just appreciate a show that surprises me so much.
Yeah, yeah.
And I used to think that that was, like, one of the most important traits for me to enjoy a show. And I actually have kind of moved away from that. I like when a show surprises me, but it has to be able to stand up to the rewatch, you know?
Right.
Like, I was watching a show a few weeks ago, and it continually did things that were surprising to me. That was fine, and I stayed engaged. But it was surprising to me because it came so far out of left field that, like, it was just random. Like, you're just going, and not exactly, this is an exaggerated example, but, like, you know, you're on a spaceship and you're talking about aliens, all of a sudden there's a unicorn prancing through. Like, yeah, you're not going to expect that, but that doesn't mean it should be happening.
Yeah, it doesn't jive with, like, the overall theme or anything.
Yeah, but this one, like, it surprises me, but it does so... In genre, it does so.
Yeah, they set up enough foreshadowing, too.
Yeah, and, like, as I'm rewatching, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can see how they set it up.
You see the connections.
And that is a good show. That's the mark of a good show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ah, TV, film, narratives. What would we do without you? So hard to do good.
So hard to do it right.
But when you do it right, it's just right.
It's just hashtag worth it.
Yeah. Are you scribbling? What are you doing? Oh, I, like, hear a pencil or something in the background.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, is that, I can't see what that is. It's just a green V on a 3x5 index card that with lines on it.
I can't sit still. I'm
sorry. Yeah, I think I've noticed that. It's okay. I usually, like, scratch a lot during the audio, so it's going to be annoying to clean up later. Anyway, this got real personal. Okay, so this has been a very wild podcast episode. We went on many a tangent.
Isn't it always?
I feel like this was wilder than most.
That's true. I thought, we used to have it down. I feel like we took too long of a break. Like, you know, we haven't done Sensei since June. We had to
ease
back
guys.
Into things.
But yeah, if you want to leave us iTunes reviews, please consider leaving an iTunes review for us. Again, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr. We have a Gmail. They're all SF in color.
Use it. Love it.
Use it. Love
it.
Yeah. I don't know what movie we're going to do next. I guess we got to pick. what movie we're going to do next. But yeah, after we do the movie, we'll be back to Sense8 episodes 8 and 10. So I'm excited to finish off Sense8. What do you mean, what?
You said episodes 8 and 10.
Oh, God. I meant 9 and 10. I don't know why the numbers that are in my head never come out of the numbers I'm trying to say. This is not the first time this has happened. Sense8, 9 and 10. Sorry.
I think part of it's because, the name, the letter, I mean.
You're very kind, but I don't think that's
the
it.
The number 8 is in Sense8.
You're very so kind, but off. I don't think that's it. I just think numbers, I don't even deal with numbers anymore. Is that your dog on the bed?
Yeah.
Oh, he's so cute. He's also overexposed, but he's very cute. Hi, frog. Okay, enough with the Ramblecast. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.